Welcome to Ultimate Sports Parent Radio, where we help parents and coaches instill confidence and ensure success in young athletes.
This is Lisa Cohn. Today on the Ultimate Sports Parent, I'm here with Stephen Raghubarsingh, who's the author of The New Game Plan, Using Sports to Raise Healthy, Happy, and Successful Kids. Stephen specializes in working with parents, athletes, and teens. We're going to talk a little bit about the winning at all costs mindset in sports. Also joining us is my brother, mental game coach, Dr. Patrick Cohn.
Get our new program, The Ultimate Sports Parent, a 14-day plan for kids' success in sports, by visiting the product section of youthsportspsychology.com. You'll learn how much pressure is too much, what to do when kids underperform, how to react to kids' losses, how to deal with difficult coaches, little playing time, and more. Visit youthsportspsychology.com, and while you're there, pick up our free ebook.
Hi, Stephen. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Lisa. Hi.
Stephen, let's talk a little bit about some of the ideas you talk about in your book, The New Game Plan. It sounds like you think parents today have a win-at-all-cost mindset.
Definitely. I think the win-at-all-cost mindset, for whatever reason, seems to be the go-to approach for many parents and athletes in terms of what's going to bring them athletic success. And that just begs a few questions. You know, what is success, number one, and whether or not they realize that it actually does more harm than good. Just in some of the athletes I've worked with, it seems like that seems to be the go-to approach, but ends up having the reverse effect.
Now, and it sounds like you're very focused on using sports to help kids be happy and healthy and successful rather than NBA players. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. To be the team, to just have the team focus as well as just using sports to encourage and enhance the self-esteem. And we kind of take a different approach, if you're okay with me kind of delving into that a little bit.
Yeah.
What we've done is we've really focused and isolated on the offensive side of sports. And the book talks about how you can, when you break it down, because the defensive side of sports pretty much is what all sports have in common. It wouldn't be fair to, if we're creating a universal theory of sports, to compare something like hockey to golf in the sense of the defensive aspect, because golf doesn't have that. So we take the offensive side of each of those sports and, sorry, the offensive side of each of those sports, and we really break it down in terms of its interaction. So when we do that, we realize that there's actually three categories of sport, not the traditional two that we're used to. Team sports and individual sports, as we all know, but also pseudo-team sports. And the reason why that occurs is when we look at it, team sports will have aspects like direct interaction, communication, and isolated play. It has all three. Individual sports only has the isolated play, and then pseudo-team sports has two of them, which is the communication and the isolated play. So it can be pretty confusing, but when you look at it in that with that kind of framework, it's easy for parents and coaches now to kind of use sport to their advantage in moving children along or you know, youth along in trying to develop the healthier aspects of maybe what they're lacking. So I know that's a lot, but that's kind of how the method to the madness, so to speak.
Now, the third category, did you call it pseudo-team sports?
Pseudo-team sports, that's right.
So it's their team sports where they're not really playing like team members.
There's a group component. Like baseball would be part of that. So if we were to look at baseball, for example, in the act of scoring, players aren't allowed to actually directly interact with each other. On the defensive side, they are, but not the offensive side. They are allowed to communicate, and they are allowed to, you know, perform in an isolated manner. So that's why baseball would be a pseudo-team sport. That's not to say that there's not great aspects of that that, you know, children can learn from that game, but there are group components, but not necessarily team components, and there's a little bit of a distinction there. So,
oh, interesting. Now, tell me a little bit about something that you called the athlete's paradox.
That's right. Well, the athlete's paradox is the mixed message that we kind of send our athletes. Basically, the approach that an athlete takes on the field isn't necessarily condoned off of it. And it can be troubling because if they have a win-at-all-cost mindset when they're going in and they do whatever it takes to win, whether it's cheat or be super aggressive or unsportsmanlike, they carry that over into the real world and they believe themselves to be above the law. And that's why we see a lot of the stuff that's happening with athletes who are using steroids or, you know, committing assaults or even literally committing murder. And it's pretty discouraging. So we really try to work on linking success on the field with success off of it, and that's what the book's really about, is you know, trying to create winners in sport and in life, and it's really our focus.
But you sound like you have a different definition of the word success.
I think I do, and I think when I talk to parents, I think we're all kind of in the same mindset where, you know, ultimately we see all the glitz and glamour that's associated with pro sports and even at a high level. But at the end of the day, you know, what is success? Is it about fame? Is it about riches? Is it about, you know, the big contract? Or is it about playing a sport that you love and perhaps, yeah, making some money off of it, but also developing the skills that it takes to deal with all the challenges that life kind of throws at you? And that, to me, and I think when we talk to parents and they start to understand that and they get it, it's a nice reminder that, yeah, that's probably what success is. So that's kind of, again, where we try to put our direction and our focus on, and when we're working with these teams and pet parents and coaches.
Now, can you talk a little bit how you use sports to help kids raise their self-esteem?
Well, great question, because we get, as you know, each athlete is, you know, it has their own set of unique issues, and but what's really wicked about what we can do with some of these teams and some of these athletes is, regardless of their personality, if we have a child, for example, that's very independent, well, we'll start them out in the sport that they probably gravitate the most to, and that would probably be an individual sport, say like tennis.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to learn certain skills there, you know, competency, self-sufficiency, all that. But chances are they probably lack a little bit in social skills. So we'll work towards maybe doing something that's more on the pseudo or team sport level and gradually wean them into that sort of direction. Alternatively, you might have a youth or a child that is somewhat dependent, and they will gravitate more towards team sports because they have all those direct interaction and communication aspects. And then what we try to do then is wean them off a little bit more towards the individual side of things. And that's how we can kind of create that balance. So, like I said, all athletes and all kids come with their own set of situations and issues. And then you kind of work with that and move them towards, you know, the goals that they need to. So, and again, the point in saying that is that the same sport for your child, if you have more than two kids or in your family, that it may not necessarily be the best thing for them to play the same sport depending on their unique set of personality traits.
So it sounds like you want kids to gravitate towards things that are more difficult for them.
And gravitate when they're getting when they're comfortable in what they're initially doing. And you don't want to set them up for failure. But you do want to be able to use encouragement and certain intervention strategies to kind of wean them off. The thing for me is the balance is the key. When kids are playing, and in any part, in any aspect of life, if you've got a balance in something, you're probably going to be a lot more well-adjusted and just have a healthier approach to things. So we do, yeah, to answer your question, yeah, we kind of do want to move them along and towards that, but it's got to be at their own pace and at their own rate and never push too much, but enough where you're encouraging them to take chances and do it in a way that's going to be, you know, to their best benefit, right? So,
well, no, let's see if we can use an example. We're going to use my 9-year-old daughter as an example.
Okay.
She's very social, so I guess you'd put her in the dependent category. And okay. She plays soccer and basketball. And she's actually a pretty good athlete, because she's always the tallest kid on the team.
Right.
But mostly she wants to be there to have fun. And her expertise, of course, is passing because she's such a social character.
Right.
What would you do with her?
Well, with her, I mean, it sounds like she's pretty well balanced as it is, and it depends on some of the other things that she likes to do. So I not only take a look at the sports, but also the extracurricular activities. But if you think that she's maybe lacking a little bit in on the independent side of things, I would, and if it's soccer that you said that she was playing, I would say, you know, maybe put her in a position where she would try a position in that sport that's a little bit more individual. It could
mm-hmm.
be in net. It could be maybe as a forward where they're, you know, taking more shots at the net versus maybe playing on defense or in the midfield position, so that she's learning that skill a little bit more. And then when she's comfortable with that, even in the drills that they do a lot of, you know, doing a little bit more individualistic drills, and then maybe moving her to a sport or activity that is a less of a team in terms of it could be something like softball, or it could be something like, I don't know if cricket's big in the States, but something along those lines, or even doubles tennis, where she's still involved with another player or teammate, but not necessarily directly interacting with them in the sport. And then slowly, again, into an activity that might be more individualistic, like maybe singles tennis. But even within that own same sport, she can do things that are a little bit different. Again, like team sports have all three components. They have the direct interaction, the communication, and the isolated play. So like you said, she's a great passer. Well, I'd work towards more of the communication and the isolated side of things, whether it be in the drills or in the games. So I don't know if that kind of would work for your daughter, but that would be something that we maybe attempt to do and kind of structure it in a way that works for her.
That's interesting. So you see sports as something that's just part of a larger life, and you don't just put a kid in one sport and send them in one direction and hope they become pros.
Absolutely not. I think sport doesn't get the credit it deserves for some of the life lessons that we end up learning. And I think I'd say the majority of the people that I've talked to, and I'm sure you guys could vouch for this as well, some of the, you know, the best friendships you've had or have come through sport, or if you were an athlete to begin with, and even some of the lessons you learn from just, you know, going through the trials and tribulations that are associated with a tournament or a season, and how you can take that into your job, your workplace, into your personal relationships is such a magnificent platform for learning some life lessons.
Now, Patrick, what are your thoughts about this particular way of looking at sports?
Well, I think it's a different way of looking at sports. You know, and Stephen, I have a different take on the whole self-esteem issue because, you know, you hear a lot of experts talking about gaining self-esteem through sports, and I don't know if it's I go in the opposite direction of that. I try to get athletes to separate their self-esteem from the whole achievement orientation. Many of my students, they when they come, they want to use sport in a way to increase their status in some way, or to gain respect, or to be liked, and you know, and often those go back to that whole social approval, goes back to the self-esteem. So I try to get athletes to actually dissociate their self-esteem from any type of achievement orientation in sport, and rather look at it that self-esteem comes from their core characteristics as the person. And I always tell my students, you're a person first, and then you're a tennis player or a ball player who happens to be a person first rather than the other way around. Athletes often start to define themselves and who they are through the sport, and, oh, they happen to be a person as well. So I think some experts have it wrong. I believe we get confidence. We learn teamwork. We learn to deal with adversity through sport, all great things. But I don't necessarily think that we should be teaching kids that we actually get self-esteem through sports, because the idea is you want them to have self-respect no matter what.
Well, and I don't disagree with you at all. I think actually we agree in a lot more ways than you might, because when I speak of sport, I speak of it in a way where it is a part of somebody's life, and these principles also apply to not just sport but to other aspects. And I would totally agree with you on that, because not once have I mentioned about achievement. I haven't talked about final results or trophies or awards, because to me, the outcome thinking part of sport is so unhealthy, and that's where the win at all costs mindset is kind of linked to. I'm a big believer I think what I'm trying to establish with the book is to really show that sports is a vehicle, and not that you're going to get self-esteem, but you can use sport to enhance what you already have. And if you look at it as a label, then that's not healthy, because if your identity is attached to sport. But for a lot of people, a lot of their waking hours are spent playing, so how can we better use sport than what it already is being used at? So if they're going in and are identifying themselves with the sport, well, if they're going to spend so much time playing it anyways, how can they use it to their best benefit, knowing that I can use a sport to actually, you know, improve my attitude around relationships or personal development? And I don't by any stretch condone anybody identifying themselves as just a hockey player or as just an athlete by any stretch. But like I said, realistically, these athletes spend a lot of time there, and I think we're probably going at about it in a different way, whereas I'd like them to take those lessons and apply them to their, whether it's their marriages or their, you know, familial relationships. So I don't disagree with you at all.
Well, Stephen, you've been tremendously helpful. I find all these concepts to be really interesting, and it sounds like your book is not yet out.
No, not yet. We're just doing a little bit of pre-launch stuff, and it'll be out fairly soon. But you can get it on Amazon.com, and feel free to check out the website as well, too, and you can find it there. So we'll get it out soon enough.
All right. Well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you both for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Take care.
Be sure to visit youthsportspsychology.com to get our new workbook CD program, The Ultimate Sports Parent. You can also pick up our free ebook, 10 Tips to Improve Confidence and Success in Young Athletes. That's youthsportspsychology.com.